If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who have pivoted from being embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast to begging for writing positions on the upcoming Star Trek series. I'm your host, Ben Harrison.
I'm your other host, Adam Pranica. It's really a show about manipulation at this point.
It's a show about manipulation and us just like really abandoning our dignity in every way we can think of.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. We were told from the start, look, you guys need to stop being so embarrassed about doing this show. You need to embrace how nerdy and awful you are. It wasn't even about being embarrassed about the show. More people were concerned about just our well-being and like how we actualize ourselves.
Like, which is surprising, given what insufferable fucks we have presented ourselves to be here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why people care about us at all.
It's kind of baffling. Hey, Adam, I thought I might open up another packet of Star Trek cards. What do you think?
Have we turned into Star Trek Presence Cast?
Yeah, we definitely stole this out of the Roderick playbook, didn't we?
Yeah, guess so. Yeah, go ahead and tear one open. What's cool is like there's only three cards inside, right? So it's not like a long
thing. I
think
it's five, but...
Well, fingers crossed for a Biff Yeager.
Oh, it would be so great. Okay. I've got one for an episode called Dark Page, and it's got a wolf sticking its head out of the turbo lift, it looks like.
Okay.
Don't remember that one, but I see the word Loxana several times on the back of the card, so I'm going to put that right down.
Probably won't see that one.
I've got one for Data's Day. Do you remember that episode?
Barely. Yeah, that's good.
I think that it actually kind of is a callback to the episode that we just watched where he's writing a letter about what his day is like to Commander Maddox back at the Daystrom Institute.
Hmm.
But the card is real weird. It's like a cat's eye rising like a moon over a rocky landscape with Data standing in front of it, kind of silhouetted against it.
So are these like artists' interpretations of the episodes, or like what you're describing doesn't sound like a screenshot, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like what the Criterion Collection poster would maybe look like if they were releasing these episodes on DVD,
which they never would.
Yeah. Here's an interesting one for Time Squared, which I believe is like two or three episodes away from now. So the cards retain their predictive power to some extent.
Your gypsy Star Trek cards.
Yeah. A lot of these are just for episodes. Yeah. So. Oh, here's one for Skin of Evil.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's got like Tasha Yar's face in kind of a screen print looking design, and then it's like dripping black goo at the bottom.
Oh, the card is dripping?
Just the design, Adam. The card is a piece of cardboard.
That's too bad. I was hoping it would be like moist a little bit.
Maybe if I weep openly on the card, it'll it'll release some goo.
There's nothing quite as devastating as the idea of a man alone in his apartment opening Star Trek cards, silently weeping.
That's like, I can actually come up with something slightly more devastating, which is a man not alone in his apartment, his wife downstairs in earshot, while he sits upstairs weeping about Tasha Yar.
She's like, I so look forward to the weekends. It's when we can spend time together. And you're like, sure, except for the hours I spend recording and editing Star Trek podcasts. Oh, boy. I only say that because I know the feeling quite well. It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's base. Now, you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform. Let's head right into Season 2, Episode 10, the episode that inspired the movie Shallow Hal. I can't even pronounce the name of this episode. Ben, can you?
Yeah, so the episode title is The Dauphin.
What does that even mean?
That is the French word for the prince who will take the throne when the king dies or abdicates. So the Dauphin is like the heir apparent.
The vice president.
And there is a feminine form, the Dauphine, but they chose to use the masculine form here for some reason.
Hmm.
I don't know why.
Well, that's the sort of foreign language trivia you only get on the Greatest Generation program.
Yeah, you think that Mission Log is talking about trivial French nobility type shit on their show?
Yeah.
They're
like the McDonald's of Star Trek podcasts.
Yeah. We're like the McDonald's dumpster of Star Trek podcasts.
We're like the chicken cordon bleu that you can get at McDonald's of Star Trek podcasts.
So the Enterprise is arriving at a planet called Dalad 4, and they're like, boy, what a dump. They start scanning it, and they're like, why would anybody live here?
Nice house-sitting job you got here. This place is a dump.
So two things are going on. Geordi is eager to get some sweet warp drive maintenance underway. So he's radioing up to the bridge asking if he has permission to get that started. And they are picking up some dignitaries. This is another... the Enterprise has to get some stuff from point A to point B episode.
Yeah.
I feel like we've had like half a dozen so far in this season already.
Just Ubering around.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of scarves they're earning has got to be pretty awesome, but...
Sure. Sure, it's not supposed to be like a main job. It's supposed to be a side job.
Right. This is a way to like pick up some extra money on the weekends, not your career.
Right, right.
They're supposed to be seeking out new life and new civilizations, not boldly ferrying people from place to place.
Boldly going after that 5-star rating.
The first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth. Scientific truth, or historical truth, or personal truth.
The person they're picking up is this princess, Celia, who is the head of state of a planet... What's the planet called? I don't even see it. They aren't arriving at Dalad 4. They're like picking her up and taking her to Dalad 4. That's where I got confused.
Right.
Boy. Oh boy. All of the shit we just talked about Mission Log, I have to retract. Like, they would never have made a mistake like this.
You know what's great, Pod, is us just doing research on the fly. That's great. It's fucking fantastic, Pod.
Anyways, they get on the radio. It's a kind of an older woman's voice, and she asks what race they are, and they're very nice about this. They just tell her, you know, they don't like take offense and go like, "What difference does it make, man?"
We're a post-racial society.
Yeah, like and a little like normative for them to say human, because there's at least three non-humans on the bridge at that time. We got Data, we've got Worf, and we've got Troy, who is, you know, only half human. So kind of a strange. I guess Riker's just speaking for himself when he says that.
Did they say humanoid or specifically human?
I think they specifically said human.
Oh no, well, yeah. That's too bad.
But this seems to satisfy the voice of the lady. So they beam him up, and it's like a nice looking 16-year-old girl and like a lady in waiting from Robin Hood level old lady who is her governess. And
right, who we've got here is Celia. That's the younger woman who's got real like Liv Tyler vibes.
And, oh yeah, she's definitely like low rent Liv Tyler.
Sure. And her handler Anya is her counterpart, sort of her bodyguard. Yeah. You might recognize Anya's voice because it is also that of Gozer the Gozerian from Ghostbusters.
What?
Yeah.
No
something
way.
Sounded super familiar about it when they're communicating with them from orbit and you don't uh-huh. see them and you just hear her request for what aliens they are.
Yeah.
It's totally Gozer.
Good pull.
Yeah.
Well.
She asks them if they are gods.
Are you a god?
No.
Then.
So they're getting kind of escorted around the ship to the quarters that they're going to be staying in, and who's walking around in the hallways with a magnet that he's supposed to take to engineering? But young Wesley Crusher.
The boy.
One could argue he's carrying a chick magnet.
Oh, nice one! Nice one.
High five.
There's definitely a moment where Celia is either looking at the magnet or the nuck that Wesley is rocking in his, refit uniform.
He's really nucking out.
Yeah, but she definitely, like, she likes what she sees. Much in the same way that I, as a 10-year-old boy, did. She takes a quick shine to young Wesley Crusher.
When you went to summer camp, did you carry around a magnet with you also?
I definitely pulled my pants up pretty high.
Yeah, gotta do that. It was the 80s.
So she's off down the hallway with Worf and her governess, Anya, and Riker kind of makes a point of hanging around in the hallway as Wesley sort of collects his jaw up off the floor.
Commander, who is she?
I think she's a governess.
No, the girl.
Riker's, keeping his options open. Doesn't necessarily want to let this one go yet. So he tells Wesley, like, she's not going to have a lot of time for you, buddy. She is going to be ruling a planet pretty soon. So
maybe
don't waste a lot of time on her.
That's hilarious. You interpreted that scene way differently than me. I saw it as like a level of Riker aloofness that was like sort of the job of the second in command is to do a lot of walking people around the ship and... You know, they're probably all the same to a certain degree. Like,
right.
Wesley kind of hits him up for some info. Like, what's the 411 on our girl, Celia? And Riker's like, yeah, I don't really know. Like, she's some girl from some place, and we're taking her to a different place. Why do you ask? I just sort of, like, put it off as...
I can't even believe that you would take the position that Riker has not noticed that there's an eligible bachelorette on the ship that he might be able to divert some of his energies toward.
Each time I try to look at this show innocently, I get dragged back into the muck. So clearly I was mistaken.
Adam, gutter, Adam.
Yeah, Celia is clearly a target for Riker.
Yeah.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Type to ramble on about something everyone knows.
They're not making a super great time because Geordi is still working on this warp drive maintenance project, and Wes is holding him up because Wes goes back to his quarters and actually has Commander Data come down from the bridge so that he can ask him about what's up with Celia. And Data's like just getting into sort of like laying it all out for him when Geordi gets on the radio and is like, Wesley, what the fuck, man? We need that goddamn magnet.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, it needs to be hand carried. It's like the size of a little football.
Yeah.
And they can't just send it through the series of tubes or whatever around the ship.
Uh-huh. Or beam it.
Is this the first time we've seen the inside of Wesley's apartment, too?
I guess so. Yeah, I mean,
it really has got, like, upscale orthodontist waiting room vibes to me.
I feel like it is Wesley's bachelor pad is, like, pretty on point.
Where's the Jim Belushi poster?
Yeah. He doesn't have, like, an ironic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles poster. He doesn't have a Lamborghini poster.
You know what's awful about what I just said is that I said the wrong Belushi. I meant John Belushi. But what's hilarious is that Wesley would actually fuck that up, and he would have a picture of Jim Belushi from, like, what was that fucking CBS show he did? Like,
I can't remember.
Yeah, edit that part out. But, yeah, like, he would totally have a Jim Belushi poster on his wall.
So there's a lot of talk about these guests that they have on board. At one point, Troy speaks up to the captain, and she says, they look like an innocent, dewy, young, nubile girl and her crotchety old governess, but they don't read like that on the mind wave.
Her dusty old bodyguard.
So they're like, they're getting a little uneasy. They do a lot of, like, going FaceTime directly to the to Celia's quarters, and Picard is like, what about you guys get a tour of the ship? And Celia's like, that sounds great. But then when Worf shows up to lead the tour, Anya's like, Celia can't come. And Worf winds up getting a lot of FaceTime with Anya, despite the fact that he expresses very early on that he finds her extremely distasteful.
I doubt if anything ever meets with that woman's approval.
So here's how the episode basically unfolds from here. There are fun and games with Worf hating Anya and Wes going around asking different crew members for advice for macking on chicks. And the first person Wes asks is Worf, who, breaks down the Klingon mating ritual, which is, as we've already established, hilariously violent.
Worf! Is this your idea of sex?
There's a pretty funny scene where Wes is asking Geordi for his advice on macking on chicks.
And
Geordi is like, out of there. Like, the second Wes starts asking him for serious advice for talking to women, Geordi's like, I'm busy, gotta go.
Geordi's like, I don't know. Like, you just stare at them for a long time? You just call them over and over again? Like,
you make a holographic simulation of them and fall in love with that instead of the real them?
First, you make a giant model ship that takes you like 10 years to build. Look, this is easy, Wes. Stop wasting my time.
And then the most disgusting of these scenes is when Riker and Guinan put on a little play acting scene in 10 Forward, where Riker puts the smarmiest, most lecherous moves on Guinan that I think we maybe ever see in the whole series. Like, this might be the defining moment for Riker's character as somebody who claims to be able to smooth talk women, and what he does when we actually see him in action is so fucking horrible.
I love this scene so much. It was like watching two champion tennis players just rally for like 5 minutes. Like, they are just shooting dialogue back and forth in, like, such a charismatic way. I dug it. I was not creeped out by it at all. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, here's the question. And I sort of, like, in retrospect, thought about it in a different way. What is your read on what they're doing? Are they, A, doing an honest depiction of what it is like when the two of them are in a bar looking to pick somebody up? Or, B, were they kind of putting one over on Wesley and playing a practical joke on him? This is how you pick up women.
Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
I absolutely believe it was B. They are enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
That they could only be making fun of Wesley to his face. Because, look, like, what Wesley's asking for isn't something that anyone else can give him. Like, there's no such thing as credible relationship advice when you're 16 years old or whatever. Like,
right.
You go out there and you get your heart broken a bunch, and that's how it happens. Like,
right, and everybody tells you, like, oh, this is going to suck, and you're like, and then you go and find out it really sucks. And
yeah, and I think that's their way of dealing with Wesley's request, rather than giving him, like, the adult truth, which is, yeah, you just sort of get your reps and you figure out who you are and then you figure out who someone else is and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. Like, that is not as satisfying as play acting a non-sex introduction to, like, a Cinemax movie. Like, like, it was so great. And, like, I feel like both actors, I feel like Frakes and Goldberg in this scene, like, they let the mask slip just a little bit. Like,
yeah.
I feel like you're seeing some real joy from them in this scene in a way that you don't see it in many other parts of the show. Like, I would have loved to hear the oral history of this scene.
I would have loved to just walk past Frakes' star wagon after they finish shooting it and watch it bounce up and down on the suspension.
So squeaky.
If this trailer's rocking, don't come a knocking.
Oh man.
So meanwhile, like, Worf is conducting his little tour of the ship, and Anya is basically like, she's like a drill instructor in basic, finding every little problem with how like the platoon has done its bunk up.
Get on your knees, scumbag!
Like,
she's when she goes into Remick.
Yeah, when she goes into engineering, she's like, flips out that Geordi is doing warp maintenance, and she's like, there's problems with the ship, and he's like,
I perform periodic inspections on all engineering systems.
And she, like, obviously knows a lot more about warp technology than you might have assumed, so she goes up and, like, at one glance knows exactly what the problem is that he's fixing. At some point, they go into the sick bay, and there is a big showdown with Dr. Pulaski, because Dr. Pulaski is treating somebody for some minor rhinovirus, and Anya flips out at the possibility that Celia could be exposed to a contagion while on this ship, and it looks like it's just going to be a great old lady fight, but then
like they can both really go toe to toe in terms of unlikability. I feel like, right, Pulaski might have really met her match at that moment.
And wouldn't it, like, all I could think about in this scene is, so Anya, like, suddenly morphs into a giant, you know, hose beast, and
she like hulks out into, yeah, like, the lead singer of the Country Bear Jamboree. Like, yeah, she is giant.
Yeah, and scary looking.
And she's got googly eyes.
Yeah, and I really just wished that Pulaski had been like, oh no you don't, and hulked out herself. Like, it would have totally turned me around on Pulaski.
It would have explained so much about Pulaski also.
But what ends up happening is Worf has to do battle with this alasomorph that we have come to understand that Anya is. And some Dustbuster Club members come showing up, and Picard is there, and he sees her morph back into her original form. And she's like, she kind of talks to him the way, like, a villain in a kung fu film would. She's like, my powers are much greater than you could possibly imagine. And Picard's like, yeah, I'm sure they are, but you got to go stay in your quarters now.
Fucking Picard is like, oh yeah, your powers are super infinite, but you still need a ride, don't you? Like, it's so fucked up. Like she carries herself like a total badass, but, like, she's the kid in high school who got into a fight at practice, but still needs a ride home from school. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't understand that at all. If your powers are so huge, get your own ride.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
So we should talk a little bit about Anya's powers, because we've sort of seen a bunch of scenes that go unexplained leading up to this moment where, you know, Anya is gone and there's like a hot second babe in
In
Celia's room.
Super hot.
So like when Celia's like talking about a boy, there's a hot second, there's like babe two pig in the city going on. And then when she needs like somebody to hug, Anya turns into like a little huggable bear character, also with googly eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, they really, if you could turn yourself into anything, like why the googly eyes? Why don't you get some straight eyes?
She always winds up having scary eyes.
Yeah.
So the crew is pretty freaked out about this. Like, what are we going to do? Like, this is not really what we've bargained for in terms of ferrying an old lady and a 16-year-old girl from one place to another.
Yeah, they're starting to get hip to the idea that she's dangerous.
Yeah. And
talking shit to Worf, right? Like, I went easy on you, man. Like, next time I'm going to totally go Admiral Quinn on you.
Yeah, not a lot of people survive their first encounter with that.
Right. Yeah.
But like as all this is going on, Wesley and Celia are like going on dates and checking out the holodeck and
eating some chocolate
together.
That's sort of Wesley's move. Like, present the chocolate.
Thalian chocolate mousse.
And to her credit, Celia is constantly dipping her finger into that chocolate. That's her move.
It's a wonderful sensation.
He always gives her chocolate and never gives her a utensil to eat it with.
Kind of a shrewd move by him.
Yeah. Sexier that way.
Yeah.
She gets to watch her lick it off her finger.
Yeah, you know you're with the wrong girl if she just like puts her face into the bowl of chocolate. It's the wrong one for you. You want that finger chocolate.
There's a scene in Picard's ready room where he kind of asks Wesley to lay off. And it's clear that Picard is very sad that Wesley has developed romantic interest in somebody other than him. But Wesley agrees and then promptly goes back to like making out with Celia in his quarters and stuff. So it just kind of like ratchets the tension up until they get to Dalet 4.
It's forbidden love.
Yeah. The hottest of loves. And when they get to Dalet 4, like Celia has a big come to Jesus moment where she's really tempted by the freedom that Wesley enjoys living in the Federation. She has this onerous burden that she has to unite the factions in her planet and lead them. She's going to have even less freedom than she did back on the dumpy planet that she came from. And she's just like, she's feeling real stressed out about it. But Anya kind of talks her into like, this is what you were raised for. These people are really depending on you and you got to do it. So Celia agrees. Anya announces that she is not going with her. She's going to go live somewhere else. She's done her part for king and country. And so Celia walks to the transporter room to go meet her destiny. As she's heading there, Worf offers to take Anya to the other transporter room.
You will be happy to see me leave.
No. You are a worthy opponent.
It's a real game respect game moment there.
Yeah. I thought that was a good little moment.
Hey, Ben, we skipped ahead. We missed the part where Celia and Wesley kiss and then she's confronted by Anya.
Oh, I should have.
And then he finds out that she's ugly.
Right. she can pull the same trick as Anya and turn into a kind of a D-minus sand person from Star Wars A New Hope.
Right, so one of the scenes is that Celia sneaks out of her apartment while Anya's out on her ship tour with Worf and sneaks into Wesley's room and is like, hey, let's have some makeouts. Sounds fun. And so she and Wesley get to making out, and then his door opens, and wouldn't you know, it's Anya standing there, and she is not happy. She's so unhappy, she turns into the giant bear person. She's a werebear.
Yeah, they make the same noises as sand people in in Star Wars.
Wesley, get out of here now!
And her aggression towards Wesley triggers that same effect in Celia. So Celia jumps up out of her seat and also turns into a werebear. And they are ready to fight. And Wesley is like completely mortified at what had happened. Yeah. It's not that there's a fight about to go down in his apartment. It's that he just moments ago kissed the werebear.
Yeah. He's like spitting spitting werebear hair out of his mouth.
Gnarly.
Celia is about to beam down to her new home and the planet that she has been destined to bring peace to. And she's really sad because she kind of ended on a bad note with Wesley. And then he comes running into the transporter room with another bowl full of chocolate. And he says, "I brought you something to remember me by." She dips her finger one more time. And then she says, "Thanks, Wes. Now you got to go because I don't want you to see my true form." And he says, "Oh, I'll remember you like this. Don't worry about that at all." And
he says that while her finger is in her mouth.
So she turns into a being of pure light, which kind of looks like if a pile of poo had a ghost.
Yeah, sort of, and like opposite Armus.
Oh yeah, that's a good call. Maybe these are the same aliens that left Armus behind.
Whoa.
No, but they probably wouldn't be having this civil war if that's true.
Yeah, that's right.
They left all their evil on that one planet.
In that pile.
So that's the end of the episode. She beams down and Wesley goes and hangs in the 10 forward lounge, and Guinan kind of talks to him about what it's like to be in this brave new world of grown-up love and loss.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy.
Yeah, super heavy.
I think that her little spiel in this is great, though. Like, she kind of turns around and gives it to him raw, the way that she and Riker didn't before. She's like, "Yeah, it's gonna, like, this will happen again and again, and it fucking sucks every time."
She could only ever say it after it happened, though. Like, that's life. You know, you can't be told that this stuff happens. You can only go through it and then realize it when it's over. I think this was a Guinan episode. This was probably the most she's been a part of an episode from the start.
Yeah, that's true. Kind of interesting that she is sort of taking over the role of ship's counselor at this point.
Well, that's just what I was going to ask, is like, is Guinan a better counselor than Troy? I think so. I don't think it's close.
Well, we don't really, like, see much of Troy counseling. And I think that there are episodes in the future that we'll be watching that we do see what she does on, like, a day-to-day basis. But I do think that a certain percentage of the crew prefer to lay their problems on their bartender rather than on Troy.
Yeah. I just think Guinan's great. Like, they intentionally keep her, I won't say underwritten, but they don't expose all of her backstory. I don't think ever, really. Like, throughout the entire series and in the movies, you get just enough so that she serves as a like character utility for the stories that she's in. But God, I could watch like an entire series about her. I think she's just great and fascinating.
Hint, hint, CBS.
Yeah. Yeah, the Guinan show. That'd be awesome.
I would watch that shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Canonical Guinan. What'd you think? Did you like it?
You know, it's not like the best episode ever, but I thought it was a solid one. I think that, like, there are a couple moments when it falls apart. Like, the alien costumes are not that great.
Yeah.
But it got to some real shit and felt kind of like they dealt with that in an emotionally authentic way,
mm-hmm.
which is not the easiest thing to do when you have like gorilla monsters running around in an episode, you know?
Yeah. I thought the price of admission was totally worth it with into club practice between Riker and Guinan. I think that was one of the most, one of the funnest scenes for me that I've seen in the series.
Yeah, that's a pretty iconic scene.
It's totally rewatchable too. Like, super fun.
Yeah.
If you're a listener of this show and you aren't watching the episodes, that's fine. But like, this scene is totally worth going back for, because we can't really do it justice.
No.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
Did you know that the actress who played Celia, Jamie Hubbard, is no longer an actress? She's a psychotherapist in L.A.
Whoa.
I'm wondering if her experience on the show just sort of drove her to that profession.
I have demons. I need psychotherapy.
If you move to L.A., she could be your therapist.
That could absolutely happen. Holy shit.
Right? Are you looking this up?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, right?
I love how in L.A., it's totally normal for the person who is your mental health practitioner to have a headshot on their website.
I thought the same.
Amazing.
Oh, under her list of services is, you know, just the grocery list of areas of clinical emphasis. At the very bottom is entertainment industry issues.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know all about that.
Yeah.
The craft services guy was a real jerk to me. On set today. I don't know how to process that.
The second AD barked at me for showing up 2 minutes after my call time.
Oh, man. What an amazing career to have in L.A. I'm sure the stories she hears are amazing.
Oh, man. I can only imagine.
As you were watching, did you happen to come across a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I'd be curious to hear yours first.
To me, look, I mean, one of the parts about Drunk Shimoda is that he's the person who's having the most fun. Yeah. I don't know if anyone has had more fun than Commander Riker during a scene with Guinan in 10 Forward. Like,
see, I wrote down Guinan for the same reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see that, too. They're total equals in that scene. And they are like, Wes is like the guy who goes to the karate studio to learn karate. And the master's like, let me show you what you're going to learn by taking some classes with me. And then proceeds to like demonstrate a 40-minute fully choreographed like karate scene against another person. And all Wes can do is just watch Riker's club karate and be like, there's no way I could fucking do this. Like, I will never be a master the way you are.
Yeah. And then like at some point, Wesley's like, guys, this is really weird. And Guinan just goes, shut the fuck up. I'm having fun.
Yeah, totally. It is great. I loved it. Yeah, I mean, it's that scene, if a scene could be a Shimoda, but it is both characters in that scene.
They're co-Shimodas in this episode.
Absolutely.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are bored.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 2, Episode 11, Contagion. The Enterprise's computer system falls prey to a mysterious electronic virus, which programs the ship to self-destruct. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I do remember this episode, and I remember loving it.
Yeah.
We get some real destruction happening, as I recall.
They blow up another galaxy-class starship in this episode.
And they come very close to being destroyed themselves. It's sort of a race. It's sort of like the 24 of Star Trek episodes. Like, it's a race against time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the most memorable eps to me. I'm stoked to see it.
Okay, well, I'm going to be vetoing it.
Ah! Okay.
That would be the shittiest way to use a veto. I'm not going to actually veto.
Except, you know, doing it towards someone who likes the episode only encourages the solo job that it would end up being.
Like, well, yeah. I guess...
it would be a reward.
Yeah.
Where you really want it to be punishment.
One of the problems with our little veto poll is that we're recording so many episodes so far in advance that we may not know the results of that poll until... well after we've gotten them.
Well, I'm confident that by the next episode, we will have a resolution.
Okay.
And,
yeah, I think
you're
probably
right.
We'll
be able to move forward from that.
Well.
Well, if you'd like to discuss this episode or any of the other episodes we've feebly reviewed, you can find us on Twitter at the hashtag GreatestGen, and you'll find me on there, at Cut for Time. Ben is at Benjamin R, A-H-R.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and everybody that's left a nice iTunes review. I think we're like, man, we're up over like 220-something or 230-something at this point.
That's great.
It's so many reviews. Like, and like the great thing is, like, they keep coming in positive. Like, people saying that they think that the show's really funny and really, like, they really look forward to it every week. And just really appreciate everybody that's said nice things in that public forum that helps other people find our show.
Yeah, seriously, like, that's some of the only feedback that we get. If you're not writing and you're not reviewing, then we don't know how we're doing. So, thanks for letting us know.
Yeah. Well, with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and also whatever this is.
This awful job interview that is our podcast.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.